All righty. Well, who has a first question? Anyone? Bueller. Anyone? No one? Okay, well, let's close in prayer and we'll go home. No one's been reading their Bible. Hey, one down the front.
Can you go over the house of God?
No. Sure. I'm sorry. The household of God?
Yes.
All right, cool. So her question is, could you go over the household of God? Now, specifically, I put these back in, you can put them wherever works best for you. I put them back in Song of Solomon, around chapter 6, and the reason I do that is because three of the people groups are found in Song of Solomon chapter 6, so that's why I put them there. I mean, but you put them wherever it works for you. But so her question is, can you go over the household of God? Now, the verse that you want with this, and before we go there, it's going to be Ephesians chapter 2, verse 19. And I'll read it. You don't have to turn there, but Ephesians 2:19 says, "Now therefore ye are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God." So he mentions this little phrase, the household of God, and I don't have a board back here. I like to draw. So, what we find in the Bible is there's seven members of the household of God. And I'm going to just rattle them off if you want to try and write these down. The first group is going to be the concubines. The second group is going to be the friend of the bridegroom. The third group is going to be the bridegroom himself. The fourth group is going to be the bride. The fifth group is going to be the virgins, plural. The sixth group is going to be the guests. And the seventh group is going to be the queens. So, have you got that? Oh, perfect. Man, look at that. Ask and ye shall receive. I need an eraser. I hope this isn't used. A snot rag. So, that's it real quick. So we got the household of God. You have one, the concubines. Not sure if that's spelled right. Then you have the friend of the bridegroom. Then you have the bride. Did I miss one? Oh yeah, duh. Thank you. Then the bride. Then the virgins, the guests, and the queens. All right, So these are the seven members of the household of God. Now, that doesn't look like much at first, but this is what I'm going to explain is how, not just how, but why this is important. These represent not only groups that you'll read about in the New Testament. You'll hear about the friend of the bridegroom. You read about him where it mentions him as John the Baptist in John 3:29. I'll put that right there. Then you have the bridegroom is going to be Jesus Christ. That's a simple one to figure out. And the concubines is going to be the, we'll come back to that one. The bride is going to be the church. That's an easy one to figure out. That's the church. That's us. Then the virgins is going to be the 144,000 Jewish virgins in the tribulation period. Then the guests are going to be Gentiles. We'll come back to that one. The queens is in the millennium. Millennium. Something like that. Now here's what you have here. In these seven groups, what you have is everybody from Genesis 1:1 to Revelation 22. So the first group is going to represent the from Adam to the law. And I'll put it like over here so you can see it. From Adam to the law. The concubines, they represent that group. So from Genesis 1:1 all the way up to Exodus 20, where they get the law. Then you have, and I'll read it for you, John 3:29, which I put up there. They're asking John the Baptist who he is, and he says this. I'll start in 27. John answered and said, "A man can receive nothing except to be given him from heaven. Ye yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but I am sent before him, but that I am sent before him. He that hath the bride is the bridegroom, but the friend of the bridegroom, which standeth and heareth him, rejoiceth greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. This my joy therefore is fulfilled. He must increase, but I must decrease." Now, that's a great verse to put on the side there, and just for your own personal edification. So from the law, then, all the way up to the first coming of Christ, is going to represent, the friend of the bridegroom is going to represent that time period. Then, obviously, Christ is going to represent the time during the Gospels, the first coming of Christ. Then the church, that's going to take place from Acts until the rapture. Well, then, once the rapture takes place, you have the tribulation period takes over. And then you're going to have a time where the Antichrist comes on the scene. You'll have a false peace, 3.5 years of peace. Then in the middle of the tribulation period, he's going to go into the Holy of Holies, sit down on the mercy seat, and Daniel calls it, and then also in the Gospels, the abomination that maketh desolate. It's the abomination of desolations. And what that means is, as soon as he sits down on that mercy seat, the wrath of God is coming down. And the Jews have only a short time to up and run as fast as they can and get out of there as quick as they can, or they're not going to make it. So that's that 144,000. So this is going to be the tribulation period, the tribulation Jews. Then over there in Matthew chapter 25, you have a thing called the judgment of nations. Matthew 22:10 is the verse I want. Matthew 22, he's telling a story, and I'm going to start in verse 1 and just go down through, but he says, and Jesus answered and spake unto them, again by parables, and said, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king which made a marriage for his son, and sent forth his servants, that's 144,000 Jews, to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. Again he sent forth other servants, to tell them which were bidden, behold, I have prepared my dinner, my oxen and my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready, come into the marriage. But they made light of it and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise, and the remnant took his servants and entreated them spitefully and slew them. And when the king heard thereof, he was wroth and sent forth his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned up their city. Then saith he to his servants, the wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were not worthy. Go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as ye shall find, bid to the marriage. So those servants went out into the highways and gathered all as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was furnished with guests. So there's the guests. And those guests are going to be, they're judged. In the judgment of nations, you see them get judged, and he comes in. Matter of fact, let's turn there. Matthew 25, a couple chapters over. Verse 31. Matthew 25:31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit down upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations. So this is the judgment of nations. He's going to judge the nations. Notice, there's nations being judged, not necessarily individuals. These are nations. And he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on his left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come ye, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king answered and said unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say unto them on his left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was a hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered, or a thirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not, look at that word that he uses to describe this, minister unto thee. That's what the ministry is. Then shall he answer them, saying, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not unto the least of these, ye did it not to me. and these shall go away into everlasting punishments. So these are the guests that get in here because they helped the Jews during the tribulation period, and God said, okay, you help them out, you help my people out, I'm going to help you out. And he counts it to them. So that's going to be the tribulation Gentiles. That's the guests. Then the last one is going to be the queens. And this is going to take place. So we got the whole Old Testament is covered in the first two. Then we have the first coming of Christ. Then we have the church. And then the 7 years of the tribulation period. Now we have the millennial reign of Christ. We have the queens. Now this is going to be represented by Sheba in the Old Testament. Remember when Solomon was back there and the queen of Sheba, not Sheba, the queen of Sheba, sorry. In 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 1, it says that the queen of Sheba came and visited and said, let's turn there. Said something that was really significant. So let's turn there and look what it said. 1 Kings 10, 1. And when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to prove him with hard questions. Unlike some of the people that came here tonight. They didn't come with hard questions. They just came in with no questions. I'm just kidding. But she came in. She came to visit him, and she came to Jerusalem with a very great train. Now, that wasn't a choo-choo train. That's like a big, long camel train. And camels that bear spices and very much gold and precious stones. And when they were come to Solomon, she communed with him all that was in her heart. And Solomon told her all her questions. There was not anything hid from the king, which he told her not. In other words, they didn't stump him. She thought, well, I'm going to come in. I'm going to ask all these hard questions, and I'll stump him. I know what I'll ask this question and stump him. And he said, oh, that's a simple one. That's this. And book, chapter, verse, laid it all out. And she went, well, I thought for sure we wouldn't know that one. Well, what about this one? No, we knew that one too. Oh, what about this question? Well, no, he knew that one too. And she was just blown away. And that's what it's going to be in the millennium. These people in the millennium, nations are going to be coming in to visit Christ in Jerusalem where he's reigning. And they're going to come in, they're going to bring in all their offerings. They're going to come in and say, he's the rightful king. He's the king of kingdom of heaven, king of the kingdom of God. And they're going to give him his due as he deserves. And so that's what you have is the household of God. So you got to see how it's not just seven people that are part of a household. This household covers the entire Bible. So you can see it clear from Genesis 1:1 all the way to Revelation 22 with the Queen of Sheba represented as the queens coming to visit and coming to ask the Lord Jesus Christ hard questions. That help? Anything else on that? Do we have a new question? I'm going to start calling on people. What do you got? Matthew 5, 10, and 11.
Okay. All right. Guess I wasn't loud enough.
All right. Matthew 5, 10, 11. Blessed are they. I'm actually going to start in verse 1. And seeing the multitudes, just so you know the context, and that's the first rule of Bible study, determine the context. What you have here is the famous Sermon on the Mount. So he says, and seeing the multitudes, he went into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, that's a great study right there. And he opened his mouth and taught them. Why does it say that? I'll come back to that. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. So persecuted the prophets which were before you. So you're asking in 10 and 11, it goes from they to ye?
Yeah, so I could totally have this wrong, but I was assuming the first part of it as the nation, like to the nation of Israel as a plural, regarding the kingdom of heaven, so the first and or second coming. But then it goes to the individual, which could also be maybe them suffering in the tribulation. But I was just trying to figure out, I know there's something simple there that I'm missing between 10 and 11, why it goes from the plural they to the singular ye.
I don't really know that one. I'm not sure if there is a real, if there's something, I'm not sure. And I don't want to give you anything that's wrong because, I mean, if you look, it's kind of interesting. It starts, blessed are the poor, blessed are they, blessed are the meek, blessed are they, blessed are the merciful, the pure, the peacemakers, blessed are they, and then blessed are ye. And he ends on that one. I always took that he was just rounding it out and making it personal, but maybe that's wrong. I don't know. So I guess I don't have a good answer. She stumped me. No, I don't know. Yeah, Chris.
I think the blessed are they, he's talking about those that did persecute. And when he says blessed are ye, he's talking to the person, you know, directly to you. Blessed are ye. Versus blessed are they, talking about others. Then he says, blessed are ye when men shall revile you. Just kind of personal application directly to them.
All of these are dealing with the nation of Israel. Right. That's how they're gonna earn their righteousness. This is this group right here is the tribulation Jews that are going to be going through the tribulation.
It just seemed to be
they're going to be poor in spirit. They're going to mourn during the tribulation period. It's all going to be them.
Right.
But he throws in a ye.
It's almost like a personal application.
I don't have a good answer of, you know, why does he switch from they to ye? I'm just being honest. I don't have a good answer for that. I never really thought about it. But
I just think he was talking about those in the past, and he's just kind of pointing to the current person that, you know, talking to you.
Well, and I could speculate and guess, but I don't want to do that. So, yeah. I'm just going to stick with what I do know. So, sorry. Yeah, and he is referring to, I mean, it's clear he is referring to the nation of Israel because he saw the multitude, and he's referring to them as ye. So, because then 13 he says, ye are the salt of the earth. So he switches back and forth, but ye are the light of the world, a city. So he's referring to a city as a ye there. So he could be referring to the whole group as a ye. But like I said, I don't want to speculate because I'm not really exactly sure why he switches there. So, sorry, not a good answer. Yes, ma'am. Is this a new question or?
New question.
Okay, anything before we move on? Anything on that one? Aaron? Okay, hold on one second. Aaron?
These people would be in the millennium, would they not, if they're righteous? So he's talking about future tense. He's talking about future tense in the millennium.
Right.
Right? This is a constitution of the millennium. So, of course, he's talking about they in the millennium. But those that are around him, that are righteous will be in the millennium with him. So,
yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to speculate if I'm not sure. So that's why it's the safer for me. I don't want to say something that's wrong. So I'd rather just say I don't know and just look dumb. And I'm really good at that. It's a skill I have. It's a spiritual gift. Spiritual gift is stupidity. It's rare, but it's actually not rare. But I have it in spades. You don't have to laugh. It's not funny. It's a serious affliction. No, I'm just kidding. She had the question of what she wanted to know. My first comment about he opened his mouth and taught them, right? Okay. So there's a good thing about this. If you've been here any length of time, you've heard Bob preach various times, and he's talked about Pam. What's the guy up north? He was a judge. Greg McClintock. Greg McClintock said to him one time, I think he was preaching or he was doing a devotion or something. I think he was preaching, and he made the comment, and Bob like really just like, wow, that was really good, and wrote it down. But he said, I think you should preach everywhere you go. Sometimes you should even open your mouth. And with that, I had seen this verse one time that he opened his mouth and taught them. And I said that's an interesting study because you can preach a lot without ever saying a word. The Bible talks about over there in, where is that, 1 Corinthians, about being an ensample and an example of Christ. An ensample of Christ is they get a taste of what Christ is like by watching your life. They see your mannerisms. They see your attitude. They see your heart. They see what you do, the things that you do, the things that you say, the places you go. They see in you a sample of Jesus Christ by the way you live your life, by the way you don't live your life. They see a sample of Jesus Christ without you ever having to open your mouth and say a word. Or they don't. So it's a good study. So does that help, sweetie? All right, I'm sorry. Back to...
Genesis chapter 40, verses 20 through 22.
Sorry, we're not doing any questions before Genesis 41 today. I'm sorry. That's that stupidity acting up on me again. Sorry about that. All right. What was the verses? 40.
Chapter 40, verses 20 through 22.
20 through 22. All right. So this is the story of Joseph is in jail, and the butler and the baker... And the candlestick is missing. The candlestick maker's not there. I don't know why, but he wasn't in this story. But they get down there, and they both have a dream. And it came to pass, verse 20, it says, and it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, and he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up his head, lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants, and he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again. And he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. What's your question?
So I was wondering if you could cover the two birthdays in the Bible, because I think it's tied to this one and also to King Herod, because he also had a birthday, and the queen requested John the Baptist's head. I was wondering if you could cover like the two birthdays in the Bible and what that meant.
Yeah. Well, You find the word birthday only three times in the Bible. This is the first time. The second time is Matthew 14:6, and the third one is Mark 6:21. Both of those cover the same story of the beheading of John the Baptist. And so we know this story. This one's clear. It's Pharaoh's birthday, and they have a feast for him. And now what had happened was, in this story, if you go back to verse 1, it says, verse 1, it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord. So, for whatever reason, Pharaoh got a tummy ache, I'm guessing. And he said it was either the butler or the baker. I'm not sure which, but one of these guys is going to die. So it wasn't a good deal for him. So they're both sweating it out. So they're in there, and they both have a weird dream. Joseph comes in and says, you guys had a weird, you guys look funny. What's wrong? And they said, well, you know, we're just not, you know, we're just, we both had a weird dream, and we don't know what we know what it means. And he said, well, you know, don't interpretations belong to God? Tell me the thing, and I'll pray and ask God what it means, and we'll find out what that dream means. Long story short, they tell him the dream, and he tells the butler, hey, you had this dream, okay, this is what it means. It means in 3 days you're gonna be back there, and Pharaoh's gonna take you both out of prison. He's gonna restore you back to your butlership, and you're gonna take the cup out of cup, and you're gonna fill it up, and that's what the butler did. Our modern concept of a butler is a guy that answers the doors, but back here, a butler was a guy that poured the drinks for the king or the king and queen or whoever. So the baker, he's the guy that, you know, he did all the cooking. Apparently they must have found out he baked something that wasn't supposed to be baked or whatever happened. Apparently they found out it was the baker's fault. So he dies, and they take his head off, or they hang him, whatever it is. And you find in this story, and this all takes place on Pharaoh's birthday. So you can keep your finger there, or turn over to Matthew 14:6. This is the second time the word birthday shows up. And I'm going to start in verse 1. It says, at that time Herod, the tetrarch, heard of the fame of Jesus and said unto his servants, this is John the Baptist. Now, he's about to go into the story, but Herod's hearing of this guy named Jesus going around healing people and doing good, and he's healing lepers, and he's doing all these mighty works. And he says, it's got to be John the Baptist. He is risen from the dead, and therefore mighty works do show forth themselves in him. For, and I was going to explain how this all happened, for Herod had laid hold on John, bound him in prison, and put him in prison for Herodias's sake, his brother Philip's wife. It gets better, Will. You don't have to leave. Okay. This is going to come back to bite me in the butt. I know it is. For John said unto him, it is not lawful for thee to have her. So it's what you got going on here is Herod and his brother Philip are sharing his wife, which isn't right. And John calls him on it and says, look, that ain't right. You're not supposed to be doing this. Come on, this isn't right here. And when he would have put him to death, this is Herod, he feared the multitude because they counted him as a prophet. They said, well, I can't put this guy to death. He's a prophet, man. He's worried about bad karma or whatever. He's worried about this coming back to bite him in the butt. So, but when Herod's birthday was kept, see, there's the second time the word birthday shows up, the daughter of Herodias danced before them and pleased Herod. Wherefore he promised with an oath to give her whatsoever she would ask. And she, being before instructed of her mother, said, give me here John Baptist's head in a charger. And the king was sorry, nevertheless, for the oath's sake. And them that sat with him at meat, he commanded it to be given her. And he sent and beheaded John in the prison. And the head was brought in the charger and given to the damsel, and she brought it to her mother, Herodias. So keep your flip over to the other one here. This is going to be in Mark chapter. Where is it? Mark 6:21. Thank you. And I want to read both accounts because you get a little bit more in this story. And I'm going to start in 16. Mark 6:16. But when Herod heard thereof, he's hearing about the fame of Jesus, he said, "It is John for whom I beheaded. He is risen from the dead." For Herod himself had sent forth and laid hold upon John and bound him in prison for Herodias' sake, his brother Philip's wife, for he had married her. So they're both married to the same woman. So you get a little bit more in this story. For John had said unto Herod, "It is not lawful for thee to have thy brother's wife." Therefore Herodias had a quarrel against him. So this really wasn't anything that Herod was, wasn't particularly probably happy about it. But the quarrel here was Herodias stirring this whole mess up. She had a quarrel against him and would have killed him. But she could not. See, she's the one that wanted him killed. You gotta catch that. That wasn't in the other story. For Herod feared John, knowing that he was a just man and unholy, and observed him. And when he heard, he did many things and heard him gladly. So when John the Baptist would get up and preach, Herod had no problem. He would listen to it and he'd hear him gladly. He'd like, "Yeah, he's a good preacher, man. Yeah, I don't agree with everything he says, but man, he's a good preacher. I like what he has to say. He's a good guy." So the quarrel here is coming from Herodias. And when a convenient day was come, that Herod on his birthday made a supper to his lords, high captains, and chief estates in Galilee. So all the bigwigs are there. And when the daughter of the said Herodias came in and danced and pleased Herod and them that sat with him, the king said unto the damsel, "Ask of me whatsoever thou wilt, and I will give it thee." And he sware unto her, "Whatsoever thou shalt ask of me, I will give it thee unto the half of my kingdom." So he makes this great, grandiose gesture. "Whatever you ask, I'll give it unto the half of my kingdom." So now he's committed now. He's saying this big public statement. And when he says that, it says, "And she went forth and said unto her mother, What shall I ask?" Now, someone reads that and said, "Now, hold on, the other story, it said she was instructed before. You're going to do this." This is all the Herodias is planning this out. It's called manipulation. She's going in and saying, "Look, you're going to go in, you're going to do this big exotic dance or whatever, and you're going to make him look like a big wig and a big shot, and it's going to make him look impressive, and here's what's going to happen. He's going to ask, whatever you want, I'll give it to you, and you ask for John the Baptist's head." Now, when he makes this thing, he said, "I'll give you anything to the half of my kingdom." It says she goes and asks her mother, "What shall I ask?" So in other words, she asked her mother, Herodias, told her, "Look, you asked for John the Baptist's head." But when he said that, she went back and, "Are you sure?" She's saying, "I can have half his kingdom." He said, "You asked for John the Baptist's head." Because she's pretty ticked off. What is that? "Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned." That's some saying I read on a billboard or something. I don't know. And she went forth and said unto her mother, "What shall I ask?" And she said, "The head of John the Baptist." And she came in straightway with haste unto the king and asked, saying, "I will that thou give me by and by," which is an expression that means immediately, right away, right now, "in a charger, the head of John the Baptist." And the king was exceeding sorry. Now, you can get that in the other story, so you got to see this. Yet for his oath's sake, he had committed himself. He made this big, grandiose gesture. He opened his big old mouth and stuck his big old foot right in his mouth and said, oh, man. So now he can't back out now. He made all this. He's going to look like an idiot if he backs out. He's like, man, you just committed an oath. Now you're going to back out? For their sake which sat with him, he would not reject her. And immediately the king sent an executioner and commanded his head to be brought. And he went and beheaded him in the prison and brought his head in a charger and gave it to the damsel. And the damsel gave it to her mother. That's a sick woman right there. Someone wants a head in a basket. You got some issues. But, so, the question is, why is it the two times in the Bible you have a birthday, somebody dies? I don't... The picture seems to be, and I'm going to speculate on this, so it seems to be that there's some kind of, because back in Genesis, Pharaoh is obviously a type of the Antichrist. In the New Testament, Herod, I don't remember if he's one of the 18 types or not off the top of my head. I don't think he was. If he is, he's not a very strong type. You could say he's a type of the Antichrist, but it's not like one of the 18. Is he one of the 18? Okay, well, there you go. Okay. I don't have that list in front of me, so I apologize. A lot of things to remember, and you can't remember all of them. But, so there's two types of the Antichrist, and a birthday gets celebrated, and someone gets beheaded. Now, the reason that's important is because if you head over here to... Turn over to Revelation, chapter, I think it's 16, if I remember correct. I don't remember where this is. Somebody know where it talks about the beheading, people getting beheaded? Where is it? 20 verse 4? That sounds late. But there it is. Okay. And I saw the thrones and them that sat on them. Judgment was given unto them. And I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast, Antichrist, neither his image, neither had received his mark on their upon their foreheads or in their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. So there's some people that are getting beheaded, and John the Baptist is a picture of that in a loose sense. So that's why I would say that's a picture of something happening during the tribulation period where a birthday apparently gets celebrated. Because, I'll give you the verse. Where is that in Revelation where it talks about the they're sending gifts one to another. Where is that? I want to say it's 10. Somebody know where that verse is? The word gifts in Revelation somewhere. 11, 10. 11. Okay, I was off. Thank you. 11:10. So, yeah, that, okay, that's what it is, yeah. It's talking about the, go to verse 1. It says, "And there was given to me a reed like unto a rod, and an angel stood, saying, Rise, measure the temple of God and the altar, and them that worship therein. And the court which is without the temple, leave out and measure it not. For it is given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city shall they tread under foot." Look at this, 42 months. That's 3.5 years. "And I will give them power. I will give power unto my two witnesses." Those two witnesses are Moses and Elijah. Moses represents the law. Elijah represents the prophets. "And they shall prophesy 1,260 days in sackcloth. These are the two olive trees and the two candlesticks standing before the God of the earth. And if any man shall hurt them, fire proceeded out of their mouth and devoureth their enemies. If any man will hurt them, they must, he must in this manner be killed. These have power to shut the heaven that it rain not in the days of their prophecy." There's Elijah. He shut up the heavens for 3.5 years. "And have power to turn waters into blood," turn powers over waters to turn them to blood. There's Moses back in Exodus under Pharaoh, "and to smite the earth with all plagues as oft as they will." There's Moses. "And they shall, and when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them, and their dead bodies shall lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom in Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. And they of the people and kindreds and tongues and nations shall see their dead bodies 3.5 days and shall not suffer their dead bodies to be put into graves. And they that dwell upon the earth shall rejoice over them and make merry and shall send gifts one to another, because these two prophets tormented them that dwell on the earth. And after 3.5 days, the spirit of life from God entered into them, and they stood upon their feet, and great fear fell upon all them that saw, which saw them, and they heard a great voice from heaven saying unto them, Come up hither. And they ascended up into heaven in a cloud, and the enemies beheld them." Their enemies beheld them. So the interesting thing about this verse is, look at the wording. "They shall rejoice over them and make merry," like Merry Christmas. What's Christmas supposed to be? It's supposed to represent the birth of Christ, Christ's birthday, Merry Christmas, and sending gifts one to another. So that seems to be a connection there of something that happened to do with when a birthday takes place, someone gets beheaded, and it happens twice. And two witnesses here die. And we see that the manner of dying in the tribulation period, Revelation 20, verse 4, thank you for that, is beheading. Does that help? Sorry, she's my wife. I got to answer hers first. You know how it is. Yeah. Come on, you just got married. You know this.
My question is, or my comment is, wouldn't that also, in a more practical sense, it's not our first birth, but it's our second birth, like in John 3 when he comes to Nicodemus. You know, our birthday is not, you know, our physical birth, but it's our spiritual birthday. I don't know if that would be a practical, I don't know. It's just a comment.
I mean,
yeah. I'm asking.
That'll preach. that'll definitely preach, yeah, because it's not your first birthday. I hadn't even thought of that. That's a good, I'm glad I answered hers first. Can you top that? No, hold on. Before you ask. No, but that's actually a really good observation, because what she asked was, does that represent how that it's not your first birth, it's your second birth, and at when your spiritual birth takes place, your first, the the old man dies, your first birth, and now you move on to your second birth. So that would be a really good inspirational application, but I hadn't even thought of that. That's really good. I like that. I may steal that. Don't tell anyone. Okay, Nikki.
I just wanted, I was just thinking about this. You had said that John the Baptist loosely is a representation of the tribulation saints. Would he be a type of that in the sense that had the nation of Israel accepted his message, right, before Christ came and they accepted Christ, they would have gone straight into the millennium. And after these tribulation saints are taken up, second coming of Christ, and the millennium starts after that. So is he a representation and a type of the tribulation saints in that sense?
Yeah, he's actually, matter of fact, they call him Elias, which is Elijah. That's the New Testament. Elias in the New Testament is the New Testament spelling for Elijah. Because in the Old Testament, you're going from Hebrew into English. In the New Testament, you're going from Greek into English. So it ends up, the spelling's a little bit different in an honest translation. In a dishonest translation, who knows what it is. But that's neither here nor there. But yeah, because they, and matter of fact, I'll give you the verse on that. Let's see, my notes are in Matthew 10. Because that's the first time the word Elias shows up. Well, where I thought they were, they're not there. What is it?
John 1:23.
Okay, well, that'll work. Yeah. So, verse 19, and this is the record of John. When the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who art thou?" And he confessed and denied not, but confessed, "I am not the Christ." And they asked, "What then? Art thou Elias?" And he answered, now notice this, "Art thou Elias?" That's Elijah. Are you Elijah? And he answered, "I am not. Art thou that prophet?" And he answered, "No." Which that prophet is a reference to the Messiah. So that's actually the Christ, so it's the same thing. But and he answered, "No." And he said, then said they unto him, "Who art thou? That we may give answer to them that sent us. What sayest thou of thyself?" And he answered, "I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness. Make straight the way of the Lord, as said the prophet Esaias." Which is a New Testament spelling for Isaiah. And they said, and they which were sent were of the Pharisees. Now the verse I want is where he says, where they're talking to Jesus and they ask him, well, who's this, who? They ask him about John the Baptist. And he says, well, John the Baptist, if they had received it, he would have been Elijah. But they didn't receive him. So it ended up changing. Which basically means that, that's probably what I'm on. I was thinking 10. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, that's it. Thank you. Let's see. I'm going to start in verse 11. Verily I say unto you, among them that are born of women, there hath not risen a greater than John the Baptist. Notwithstanding, he that is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. And from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force. For all the prophets in the law prophesied.
That verse right there goes right along with this, what I said over here, from the law to Christ.
So you can put that down with that. For all the prophets in the law prophesied until John. And if you will receive it, this is the Elias, which was for to come. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. So he could have been. He said, but there was conditional. That was the problem with it. They didn't receive it. So they moved on. And he said, okay, well, plan B. So does that help? Yeah. Who said that? Oh.
Verse 21, back in John 1.
Okay. John 1, 21.
All right. And they asked him, what then? Art thou Elias? And he saith, I am not. Art thou that prophet? And he answered, no.
I was just wondering why. How come you said that the reference to that prophet is Christ? Because just looking down at verse 25, it says, if thou be not that Christ, nor Elias, neither that prophet. So like he mentions Christ and then also that prophet as separate like people in that verse down there. So I was just curious, would that prophet be Christ or like maybe like Moses or somebody else?
Yeah, that could be actually Moses. But the reason I say that is because it's Deuteronomy chapter 18. If you flip back there to Deuteronomy 18, I think it's 18. Yeah, 18:15. The Lord thy God will raise up unto thee a prophet from the midst of thee. Now this is Moses speaking. Of thy brethren, like unto me, unto him ye shall hearken according to all that thou desirest of the Lord thy God in Horeb in the day of the assembly, saying, let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, neither let me see this great fire anymore, that I die not. And the Lord said unto me, they have well spoken that they have that which they have spoken. I will raise them up a prophet among their from among their brethren like unto thee, and will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. So the verse that goes along with that, if you flip over from, keep your finger there or put some notes down or whatever. But Acts chapter 3, verse 22, says this, for Moses truly said unto the fathers, a prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you, of your brethren, like unto me, him shall ye hear in all things whatsoever he shall say unto you. And it shall come to pass that every soul which will not hear that prophet shall be destroyed from among the people. Yea, and all the prophets from Samuel and those that follow after, as many as have spoken, have likewise foretold of these days. Ye are the children of the prophets and of the covenant which God made with our fathers, saying unto Abraham, in thy seed shall all the children of the earth be blessed. Unto you first God raised up his son Jesus. And sent him to bless you in turning away every one of you from your iniquities. Now look also in, where's the other verse? 7:37. This is Stephen's preaching to the people in the final rejection. And he says this, Acts 7:37. This is that Moses which said unto the children of Israel, a prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren, like unto me, him shall ye hear. This is he that was in the church in the wilderness with the angel which spake unto him in the Mount Sinai, and with our fathers, who received the lively oracles to give unto us, to whom our fathers would not obey, but thrust him from them, and with their hearts turned back into Egypt, saying unto Aaron, make us gods to go before us. As for this Moses, which brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what is become of him. And they made them a calf in those days, and offered sacrifice unto the idol, and rejoiced in the work of their own hands. Then God turned and gave them up to worship the host of heaven, as is written in the book of the prophets, O ye house of Israel, have ye offered unto me slain beasts and sacrifices by the space of 40 years in the wilderness? Yea, ye took up the tabernacle of Moloch and the star of your god Remphan. There's your six-pointed star. Figures which ye made to worship them, and I will carry you away beyond Babylon. Our fathers had the tabernacle of witness in the wilderness, as ye had appointed speaking unto Moses, that should make it according to the fashion as he had that he had seen, which also our fathers that came after brought with Jesus. Now this Jesus here is Joshua, just so you know. Jesus, Joshua in the Old Testament is the word Jesus in the New Testament. You got to know that, because this is not Jesus Christ, this is Joshua. After brought in with Jesus into the possession of the Gentiles, whom God drave out from before the face of our fathers unto the days of David. So you put it in the context, it's clear, it's Joshua. Who gave favor before God and desired to have a tabernacle for the God of Jacob, but Solomon built him a house. Howbeit the Most High dwelleth not in temples made with hands, as saith the prophet, heaven is my throne, the earth is my foot, and the earth is my footstool. What house will ye build me, saith the Lord, and what is the place of my rest? Hath not my hands made all these things? Ye stiff neck, and then he ends the sermon with, you know, every head bowed and every eye closed. But that's a reference there to, there's two of them, and he's basically pointing out, I think there's a verse right before that. This Moses, yeah, I went too far on that one. I was trying to find the verse and I didn't find it. The point that he was making here in 37, this is that Moses, if you actually back up to like verse 34, I have seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and I have heard their groaning, and am come down to deliver them. And now come, I will send thee into Egypt. This Moses, whom they refused, saying, who made thee a ruler and a judge? Remember, this is when he went down originally, and he comes out and says, hey, I'm Moses. I was in the king's house, and I've been living there for a while, and I decided I don't want to be amongst the king anymore. I'm going to be amongst my people, and I'm going to be your ruler. Let's have a heyday. Not a birthday. We don't want to celebrate birthdays. I know how those go. But, and he comes down, and they said, well, who are you? And he said, I'm here to deliver you. And he said, well, you mean like yesterday when you killed that Egyptian and hit him in the sand? He said, well, maybe. I didn't know anyone saw that, but yeah, okay. And he said, well, who made you a ruler and a judge over us? The same did God send to be a ruler and a deliverer by the hand of the angel which appeared unto him in the bush. So this is that Moses, and then, yeah, I missed that. I went a little bit too far. But the point that I'm making here is that Moses is a picture of Jesus Christ. And he talks about this prophet that he was going to raise up is clearly Christ. The prophet that he raised up was Christ. And that's the prophecy in Deuteronomy 18. Does that help? Where'd you go? We're back there.
Did that help?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought Zona has a question. No. Who are you pointing at?
The computer.
Oh.
Sorry, we have a question online.
Skynet? I don't want to answer Skynet's questions.
So the question is, there are two different accounts of Saul's death. The first one is 1 Samuel 31:4, and then the second one is 2 Samuel 1, chapter 1, verses 9 to 10. The question is, what's up with that?
First Samuel 31:4, right?
Yeah.
And then 2 Samuel, what was this, the other one?
1, 9, and 10. Chapter 1, verse 9 and 10.
Okay, well, let's look up. So, in 1 Samuel 31, it says that, in verse 4, and then Saul said unto his armor bearer, draw thy sword and thrust me through, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. Is suicide. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So Saul died, and his three sons and his armor bearer and all his men that same day. So there's count number one. Now, 2 Samuel 1, and I want to back up a little bit so you see who this is. I'm going to start in 1. Now, it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David abode 2 days in Ziklag, and it came to pass on the third day that, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul with his clothes rent and earth upon his head. And so it was when he came to David, he fell upon the earth and did obeisance. And David said unto him, from whence comest thou? And he said unto him, out of the camp of Israel am I escaped. And David said unto him, how went the matter? I pray thee, tell me. And he answered that the people were fled from the battle, and many of the people also that were are fallen and dead, and Saul and Jonathan are dead also. And David said unto him, unto the young man that told him, how knowest thou that Saul and Jonathan, his son, be dead? And the young man said, and the young man that told him said, as I happened by chance upon the mountain of Gilboa, behold, Saul leaned upon his spear, and lo, the chariots and the horsemen followed hard after him. And he looked behind him and saw me, and called unto me and said, and I answered, here am I. And he said, who art thou? And he answered him, I am an Amalekite. And he said unto me again, stand upon me, stand, I pray thee, upon me, and slay me, and anguish, for anguish has come upon me, for my life is yet whole in, So I stood upon him and slew him, because I was sure that he could not live after that he was fallen. And I took the crown that was upon his head and the bracelets that was on his arm, and had brought them hither unto my lord. Then David took hold of his clothes and rent him, and likewise all the men that were with him, and they mourned and wept and fasted even until even. For Saul and Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord, and for the house of Israel, because they were fallen upon the house of, they were fallen by the, good, now, because they were fallen by the sword. I'm going to learn to read one of these days. So, you have two different accounts, and this is actually an easy answer. I got to find where the verse is, but there's a place where, there's a place where Abner takes one of the king's sons and makes him king instead. Might be just the next chapter. And then someone goes. Give me 1 second, I'm sorry. There it is, 4:5, chapter 4. I'm going to start in verse 1. It says, when Saul's son heard that Abner was dead in Hebron, now, just so you know, Joab kills Abner, and he's not supposed to do this. He doesn't. He's not doing this on David's order, but it could look that way. So he's worried about this. So anyway, when he does this, he's got to fix this. Now when this happens, he's like, oh my gosh, now I'm going to get killed. And Saul's sons, verse 2, and Saul's son had two men that were captains of bands, and the name of one was Baana, and the name of the other was Rechab, the sons of Rimmon, a Beerothite, of the children of Benjamin, for Beeroth also was reckoned to Benjamin. And the Beerothites fled to Gittim. And they were sojourners there unto this day. And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son who was lame on his feet, for he was 5 years old when tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And it came to pass, as she made haste to flee, that he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. And the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothites, Rechab and Baana, went and came about the heat of the day to the house of Ishbosheth, who lay upon his bed at noon. And they came in thither in the midst of the house as though they would have fetched wheat. So they come in like they're going to do something. They're there to get something. And they smote him under the fifth rib. And Rechab and Baana, his brother, escaped. And when they were come into the house, he lay upon his head, his bed, in his bedchamber. And they smote him and slew him and beheaded him and took his head and got him away and went through the plain all night. And they brought the head of Ishbosheth unto David in Hebron and said to the king, behold, the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, thine enemy, which sought thy life. And the Lord hath avenged my lord the king this day of Saul and of his seed. And David answered Rechab and Baana, his brother, the sons of Rimmon, the Beerishites, whatever that is, and said unto them, as the Lord liveth, who hath redeemed my soul out of all adversity, when one told me, saying, behold, Saul is dead, thinking to have brought good tidings, I took hold of him and slew him in Ziklag, who thought I would have given him a reward for his tidings. How much more when wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house upon his bed? So right there it shows that what David figured out was that this Amalekite that came in, and he was doctoring the story to make him look better, because he thought this would have been good news. And if he finds out that, hey, I'm the guy that actually took Saul's head off, I'll get a reward or something. And he was in for a surprise, because he said, no, this is not a good day. So he took him and had him killed. I think he had one of his men fell on him and killed him. So that's the
The difference is one of them was lying. And that was this guy, that Amalekite, that was lying and stretching the truth, so to speak. So, well, that's all we got. One announcement before we close up. Justin's cleaning crew